Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to Burning Daylight, the only podcast for the working cowboy.
Well, welcome back, Daylight Burners. Hope y'all had a good weekend. Recording this Sunday, October 29th. I guess it's my birthday tomorrow, so by the time you're hearing this, I'll be beating my kids or something. No, I'm not beating my kids. Be homeschooling my children, wishing I could beat them at times. But it's what happens when you turn 38, I think. Well, for me, anyways. So I've been thinking on this as news, ag news update that I wanted to do, and I wanted to have a catchy name, because, you know, I like catchy names, and, but I also wanted to do an episode fairly regularly, you know, once a week, once every other week, something along those lines, to highlight what's going on in the ag world, and it's a way to educate myself and hopefully educate you all a little bit. And because, you know, between 11 billion stories about Israel and Hamas and everything pertaining to that, a lot of the stuff that folks us here in flyover country gets kicked to the wayside. So anyways, I think I found my catchy term, and I'm just going to call it the fucking farm report, because I'm trying to style it a little bit after, you know, the farm news updates that you'd hear on the radio. I guess they probably still do them. I don't listen to the radio anymore. But also a little bit of Burning Daylight flair to it. So why don't we go ahead and get into it? Let me find that article, because there's some interesting stuff, like kind of overall. Let me find this article and we'll dive into it. But here we go. This is from, and I got a shout out to Jen Hill and Reagan O'Donnell for, and Kate Bowen as well. She sends me some articles, but they both hooked me up with a couple different ag news sources. So this is from Morning Ag Clips, and farm groups applaud seven new co-sponsors for the bipartisan OFF Act. Today Farm groups, including Farm Action Fund, American Grass Fed Association, Competitive Markets Action, Independent Cattlemen of Wyoming, and RCAF USA applauded seven members of Congress for their new co-sponsorship of H.R. 1249, Senate Bill 557. The Bipartisan Opportunities for Fairness in Farming, or the OFF Act, which would restore accountability and transparency to agricultural checkoff programs. And really is kind of a lot of different people in here. So we'll see where this goes, but it's introduced by House Representatives Nancy Mace. She is from a Republican from South Carolina. We covered her the other day. She was one of the representatives that was questioning the witnesses in the UFO hearing the other day. Dina Titus, she is a Democrat from Las Vegas, Nevada District 1, and in the Senate by Senators Mike Lee of Utah and Cory Booker of New Jersey, a Republican and a Democrat. Obviously, the states should give it away, but Mike Lee is a pretty, in my books, one of the few pretty solid members of Congress. I'd put him and Rand Paul. I think Rand Paul's better than Mike Lee on a few things, but they line up pretty eye to eye. Cory Booker is a joke. I don't know anything about Dina Titus. Nancy Mace, she's pretty new to the politics game. Or at least to federal politics. So, I haven't really made up, my mind on her. She kind of seems like a Boebert with, less crazy maybe, but kind of in that same wing. I think she's kind of a MAGA diehard. Maybe, I'm not for sure. Like I said, I don't know. I haven't made up my mind on her. But she has been, like, with this, she's kind of got her hands in a bunch of stuff. So, maybe one to look at. But the newest co-sponsors include Ed Markey, Senator Ed Markey from Democrat Massachusetts, and Jerry Nadler, Democrat from New York, Oversight and Accountability Ranking Member Jamie Raskin. Well, you have Mike Lee, who's pretty good. Nancy Mace might be pretty okay. I don't know about Dina Titus, but she's from Vegas, so she probably sucks. Cory Booker sucks. Ed Markey sucks. Gerald Nadler sucks. Jamie Raskin, Democrat from Maryland, sucks. Congressional Progressive Caucus Chair Pramila Jayapal, Democrat from Washington, sucks. And Representatives Nanette Diaz-Berrigan, Democrat from California, I'm going to preemptively say she sucks. Jared Huffman, Democrat from California, also just through association with Democrats and California, you probably suck. And Eleanor Holmes Norton, Democrat from D.C., she probably sucks. It's funny how they can co-sponsor a bill, but they can't vote. Like D.C. has a non-voting member of Congress. British Virgin Islands has a non-voting member of Congress. I think Puerto Rico same way. but they sponsor the legislation. Optics, I guess. In total, the OFF Act now has more bipartisan support than any previous Congress, with 15 co-sponsors in the House and 6 in the Senate. So this was written October 26th. There's going to be plenty of chances for more bipartisan stuff. We got a lot of war ahead of us, but. So this is a bill that would, so it pertains to like the pork checkoff, the beef checkoff, all these checkoff programs that producers are forced to pay into. It's a tax that is then pooled together and then used for research and education of their product. And a lot of people think that it has been corrupted over the years. I would tend to agree. In the cattle business, in particular, the NCBA stands the most accused of being corrupt and essentially using checkoff funds to pad their own pockets. And I don't know the ins and outs of that particular case, but I wouldn't be surprised if yeah, there was a lot of shady shit that went on. And still goes on with all that. So this would be a bill that would let's see. So this is Marty Irby, president of Competitive Markets Action and board secretary at Organization for Competitive Markets. USDA scandal-ridden checkoff programs have long been corrupted by the swamp, and it's time for Congress to take action and help save the last remaining independent family farms in America. Wyoming independent cattlemen have long asked for reform of the current checkoff program, which has no accountability to those producers who are forced to pay the checkoff, said Judy McCullough, director and secretary of Independent Cattlemen of Wyoming. Bill Bullard, one-time guest of the Vernon Daylight podcast, ranchers deserve Congress's help in bringing transparency and accountability to these government-mandated programs that have extracted wealth from their farms and ranches and placed it in the hands of lobbying organizations that continually fight against their interests. So that's a good defense of this bill, or you know, a good statement in support of this bill. One of the big issues is with NCBA in particular, who is the biggest recipient of checkoff funding. I forget how much, what the percentage of it is, but it's a high percentage. And the NCBA used to be the National Cattlemen's Association, and then there was like a beef association. And in the 90s, I believe they merged and created the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And they did that under the guise to pull their resources and their political you know, ammunition and sway to be able to more effectively lobby Congress and help the industry and all in all. In the beef checkoff program, you can only use the funds to promote beef, not cattle, but the product beef. So it's and then by the combination of, or the merging of these two trade associations and creating this one group, accusations are that this group is heavily in bed with the packing industry, because, well, they are. They've got a lot of packing interests within their association, and therefore the packers have greater say over the checkoff funds, which is probably true. And a lot of times they implement these, they help get these regulations and laws passed that benefit the packer, not necessarily the rancher, the feedlot guy, and a lot of times in fact work against them. So that's the accusation being made. I tend to agree with it for the most part. not having checked into it a ton, particularly on the checkoff side of things. But I would tend to agree with Bill Bullard on that. What the ins and out of this off act are, I don't know. But the fact that a bunch of people who really suck on just about everything are lining up behind it gives me a lot of pause. Sometimes no solution's better than a bad solution. You know, sometimes no deal's better than a bad deal. And yeah, with guys like Cory Booker and Ed Markey and Jerry Nadler, it seems like maybe there's more to this than meets the eye, and Mike Lees is on board, but maybe he's in the wrong on this one. Maybe he's been misled. Who knows? Mike Lee's a really sharp guy, so like I said, I won't write it off because Mike Lee's on it, and I generally tend to trust him on these type of deals. But there's a lot of shitty people on the other end, so we'll wait and see. But it's an interesting bill. We'll see if it goes anywhere. I thought the U.S. Prime Act that Thomas Massie was pushing was a really good bill, which would allow state-inspected processing facilities to be able to sell across state lines without having to have a federal inspector. And made a lot of sense, and of course it went nowhere. So this off act, I mean, 15 co-sponsors, it might actually go somewhere. But there was only one Republican in the House, and that's got to pass the House at some point. So I don't know. We'll see. In other news, officials say water cuts from these states will protect the Colorado River. Those states being California, Arizona, and Nevada. This is an interesting one. So federal officials said Wednesday that conditions have improved on the Colorado River to the point that a plan by California, Arizona, and Nevada to voluntarily reduce water use should help keep the river basin on stable footing for the next few years. Well, it's in better conditions because we got a lot of moisture over the past last winter and this summer as well. But there was a big fight over this, and the government was about to step, the federal government was about to step in and enforce some sort of compact. But U.S. Department of the Interior said in a statement that the risk of reaching critically low water elevations at Lake Powell and Lake Mead, the river's two key reservoirs, have gone down substantially. So probably be a little bit before we find any more bodies at Lake in Lake Mead, because water level's gone up quite a bit. We have staved off the immediate possibility of the system's reservoirs from falling to critically low elevations that would threaten water deliveries and power production, Deputy Secretary Tommy Boudreau said in the statement. Well, Tommy Boudreau, you didn't do shit. You watched the snow fall and the snow melt and run off and fill up the lake. You didn't do shit. River serves 7 western states, Native American tribes in 2 states in Mexico, supports a multi-billion dollar farm industry in the west, and generates hydropower across the region. Years of overuse by farms and cities and the effects of drought worsened by climate change has meant that much less water flows through the river today than in previous decades. That part, I'm sure, is 100% true. And whether it's climate change or not, or the fact that you're sucking the water table dry, and I don't know. There's a lot of factors to it, but it's been bad. And the biggest the biggest issue has been drought, which is something you really can't control. But the announcement displays how much of things have changed since summer 2022, when the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation Commissioner Camille Touton said drastic cuts would be needed to stave off a crisis in the river. The states failed to reach a consensus on cuts, and the federal government did not end up enforcing any. So they got really up in arms. They were fighting over who was going to have to make cuts, and then they couldn't come to any sort of deal, and then the feds didn't step in anyways. And then it snowed and rained a whole bunch, and now everything's like, oh, hey, we're okay again. And so it was almost like it was a bunch of hype to get people worried for no real good reason. Just like, hey, at some point, it will rain. In the meantime, like you should, like that, there definitely probably needed to be some cuts. But like I said, it eventually does rain, and then it did, and it snowed, and now we're in pretty good shape for now. I don't know long term. Probably still on the low end, but hey, we've been in a drought, so we'll see. They're calling for another wet winter this year, so. I'm wearing my flip-flops as long as I can, because I was stuck in muck boots a lot last winter, and I'm gonna dry these toes out as much as I can before I have to be stuck in muck boots again. So, earlier this year, the Biden administration released two options that would have forced cuts on Arizona, California, and Nevada, either proportionally or based on existing water priority system, which most benefits California. Threat of those two options finally forced the three states to reach their own voluntary plan for how to reduce their use of the river's water. In May, they proposed to help shore up water levels by conserving at least an additional 3 million acre feet of water through the end of 2026 in exchange for $1.2 billion in federal money. And that's something. It's like, all right, we're gonna stop sucking this river completely dry, but only through the end of 2026, and only if you pay us a shitload of money. Though the federal government needs to finish its regulatory process, Wednesday's announcement indicates it is poised to officially accept the plan. So. I guess they're not out of the woods yet, but step in the right direction, I suppose. Over on the dairy side of things, the IDFA president tells the World Dairy Summit that the dairy industry is committed to inclusivity. Michael Dykes, the president, and all right. Now, if you're going to be inclusive, do you have to change your name from Dykes, because you're going to offend, you know, the whole L spectrum of the LGBT. The whole L category, you're pissing them off with your last name. And I know it's not something that like you chose, I don't think. I guess I don't know that, but I assume you didn't choose that, but honestly though, it's really problematic, just your name. So probably change that. But he's the president and CEO of the International Dairy Foods Association. He reinforced the dairy industry's commitment to creating an inclusive culture that fosters professional development and empowerment for all people throughout their careers today at the 2023 IDF World Summit. Dykes joining a panel focused on diverse workforces of mostly Guatemalan men, highlighted IDFA people strategy programs that engage and support leaders at all levels in the dairy industry who are working to create a world-class places of employment across a variety of manufacturing and operational settings. the future of the dairy industry and our ability to remain globally competitive depends on the developing of the workforce of the future, cultivating the next generation of leaders and empowering and supporting diversity in leadership roles. Meaning, you're eventually going to have to hire some of them Hondurans to be managers so they can talk to these other lower paid Hondurans for you and you don't actually have to interact. I sound a little bitter on that, but I've been around the dairy world a little bit, and I mean, they're diverse for sure. Like I said, there's Mexicans and Hondurans and Guatemalans, and I assume most of them have papers. Whether they're those people with, you know, belong to those papers, or those papers belong to that person legally, is a different story. And it's one of those deals where, like, I mean, somebody's got to milk the cows. Somebody's got to do that shit. And you're not seeing a whole bunch of hardworking blue collar, white and black and even brown Americans lining up to do those jobs. So they import a bunch of South American, Central American, and Mexican labor for cheap, and the dairy industry keeps chugging along. Kind of like the meat packing industry, kind of like just about every other industry you can think of. It's really kind of crazy, like the Native American, not like Indian Native American, but your average American in the workforce just does not want these, like, they don't want to go work in a dairy. They don't want to go work in a packing plant. And, but there's a lot of poor immigrants that'll come over and do it. Yeah, I don't know whether this is just more diversity and inclusion nonsense that gives everybody, you know, warm, fuzzy feeling inside or whatever. So good for you, dairy. Secretary Tom Vilsack says the farm bill negotiations are not forward looking enough. Lawmakers need to do more to encourage farmers to adopt climate smart production practices and access new technology, the head of the USDA said. Farm bill negotiations would need to be more forward-looking if the U.S. wants to encourage farmers to take action on climate and transition to new technologies, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said. Discussions are too focused on fixing what didn't work several years ago, Vilsack said during a conversation at the World Dairy Summit in Chicago. So, there we go again. If he was on the panel with Mr. Dykes, noting that negotiations currently center around issues such as reference prices and disaster programs. I think the challenge we have with the farm bill conversation today is it's sort of looking back, the head of the USDA said. Federal policy should instead prioritize making climate smart technology cheaper and more readily available to farmers. What does that mean? Well, we'll see. Climate funding remains one of the largest points of contention for the 2023 Farm Bill as lawmakers fight over what to do with an extra $20 billion in conservation money from the Inflation Reduction Act. The both sides hope to roll in the extra money into the overall Farm Bill funding pot for future years. Democrats want to keep the money tied to climate initiatives while Republicans want it used for other programs. The debate over climate funding comes as dysfunction on Capitol Hill bogs down the progress on farming's largest spending package. So, this was wrote on the 17th, so we've got a speaker now. But they still got to pass something to fund the government past, I think they got 3 weeks to do it, something like that. They wasted 3 weeks electing a new speaker who I don't know much about. I don't think many people do. He kind of came out of nowhere, so I'll do some more research. We'll probably talk about him on Fence Post Politics. But, yeah, so now they got... It was a six-week spending bill that they had a stopgap deal that got McCarthy fired. And so now 3 weeks electing a new speaker. Now they've got 3 weeks to push something through. And then... they can move on to the farm bill, maybe. Farm bill, 2018 farm bill expired on September 30th. And farmers are warily bracing for unprecedented disruptions that would begin next year. Some in the industry worry that partisan infighting raises prospects that lawmakers will shy away from making any bold proposals that could get pushback. Vilsack hopes a future farm bill will consider the work done by the USDA and expand opportunities that support a transition into more renewable production practices. The USDA has made $3 billion available for farmers to voluntarily participate in conservation efforts, and the program has become oversubscribed for after a record number of producers applied for funding in 2023. Not this farm bill, but the next farm bill could very well be the bill in which you incorporate the programs and policies that make the technology more readily available. So $20 billion is, is a lot. Even in the grand scheme of everything, like they're like that's a lot of money. I don't know how. I don't know how big the farm bill is, but it's I would say easily in the hundreds of billions of dollars. So, but even so, $20 billion for climate funding is that's a lot. Will we ever know what it gets used for? Who knows? I'm sure it'll be some program that keeps poor farmers under their thumb for generations to come. So, hate to be pessimistic on that. It's just that's kind of how things go, and it just kind of is what it is, I guess. This is an interesting one too. So, damn it. That was not what I wanted. All right, here we are. Heading over to Arkansas. Arkansas orders Syngenta to sell farmland over ties to China. Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders gave the global seed company 2 years to divest its property in Craighead County before the state can take legal action. Syngenta AG is facing demands from Arkansas to sell its farmland in the state over national security concerns regarding the seed and pesticide developers' alleged ties to China. So this is kind of a recurring theme in rural states, is that a lot of companies with ties to China are buying up a bunch of farm ground. And now there's some states that are kind of pushing back. So Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders said Tuesday that one of the world's largest agribusinesses must give up its land holdings in Arkansas in the next 2 years or face legal actions. Syngenta, owned by a Chinese state-owned enterprise, ChemChina, has about 160 acres in the state through its subsidiary Northrop King Seed Company, valued at $1.12 million. So not a lot of land. You know, urban people will think, you know, 160 acres is, that's so much freaking land. But, I mean, if you're farming, it's really not. The announcement comes as state and federal lawmakers increasingly target Chinese ownership of U.S. farmland. The Senate this summer approved provisions banning foreign adversaries from purchasing farmland as a part of its massive annual defense bill, though it still needs sign off from the House. Close to half the states have laws on the books to restrict foreign ownership of U.S. farmland, with 11 enacting legislation within the past year. Micah Brown, a staff attorney at the University of Arkansas's National Agricultural Law Center. Although foreign ownership laws have been on the books in some cases since the 1700s, this is the first time a state has actually taken action. I said Arkansas is really the first to enforce their foreign ownership law. Syngenta's farmland in northeast Arkansas is used mostly for seed research. At a press conference in Little Rock, Sanders alleged that Chinese state-owned enterprises filter their findings back to their homeland, stealing American research and telling our enemies how to target American farms. Arkansas Attorney General Tim Griffin issued a letter on Tuesday to Syngenta Seeds LLC and its subsidiary, Northrop King Seed Co., saying that this land is not divested. In the next 2 years, we shall commence an action in the circuit court, which could lead to judicial foreclosure of the property. Syngenta is also facing a $280,000 civil penalty, or 25% of the fair market value of the property, for failure to report foreign ownership under state law in a timely manner. Syngenta declined to immediately comment on the matter. Company spokesperson told Reuters that it was disappointed and called the decision a short-sighted action that will hurt Arkansas farmers. And then it later says approximately 40 million acres of U.S. ag land were owned by foreign entities as of December 31st, 2021, with China making up less than 1% of the total. About 3.1% of all privately held farmland is foreign owned. So not a lot, but still probably too much. This one, I'm not real for sure how I feel about it. I don't think that it's okay for the Chinese government to own a bunch of land here in the United States. That makes no sense to me. Also, I don't like the state government forcing a company, like, it's kind of like where they're dissolving the Trump Enterprise in New York because he allegedly exaggerated his the value of his properties. And he's like, I don't like the fact that the government can just come down and say, like, you have to do this now. Like, I don't like that. I don't mind it quite so much when they're telling it to a foreign government. So, I mean, that makes it a little bit better. But either way, I'm not real cool with the government, whether it be, you know, federal, state, or local, just pushing businesses around. Like, you have to do this now. You got to do this. You got to do this. Like, it's kind of a pain in the ass, and I don't like it. I don't like it. I'm on record saying I'm not a fan. So, but also, China's pretty shady. They probably are stealing a whole bunch of secrets, but I mean, that's going to happen. But I'm kind of okay with them not being allowed to own farmland in Arkansas. Like, that part doesn't bother me too much. So, we'll see what happens on that. There's I think Missouri did something similar, and There's probably a bunch of them in the Western states that are, if they don't have these type of laws, they're probably coming down the pipe. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with this. It'll be interesting. And then let's go last. Go to the last one for today. This is kind of an interesting one. It's Proposition 1 in the state of Texas. And, god damn. If I could run my damn screen, that would be helpful. But, so there's the Texas Agriculture Commissioner. And so this is a statement from him. It says, I urge Texans to exercise their right to vote and weigh in on constitutional amendments during the upcoming election. You can head to the polls on election day, November 7th, to cast your ballot, early voting, whatever. Texans need to know that there are several critical constitutional amendments on the ballot this fall that will have a significant impact on our Texas agriculture industry. Many of the proposed amendments would generate funds to support water infrastructure, rural broadband, and property tax relief. Proposition 1, the Right to Farm Act, is on the impending ballot and requires your immediate attention. Agriculture is crucial to the Texas economy and has shaped the culture of our great state. Still, it is under threat from cities and municipalities that prioritize tax revenues over Texas food security needs. Proposition 1 would protect the right to farm and ranch in our Constitution, yet still allow for justifiable regulations that protect health and safety, prevent danger to animal health or crop production, and conserve our natural resources. I highly encourage all Texans to vote yes on Proposition 1. And then, so this is from Ballotopedia. The actual ballot title as follows: the constitutional amendment protecting the right to engage in farming, ranching, timber production, horticulture, and wildlife management. Let's have the full text. I thought I found it. All right, so the measure would add a new section is to Article 1 of the state constitution. The people have the right to engage in generally accepted farm, ranch, timber production, horticulture, or wildlife management practices on real property they own or lease. This section does not affect the authority of the legislature to, by general law, the regulation of generally accepted farm, and then also the section does not affect the authority of the legislature to authorize by general law or the use or acquisition of property for public use, including the development of natural resources of this state. I don't know exactly what this means. It sounds nice, the right to farm amendment. I don't really know what that means. I guess they can't disallow you from farming or, you know, timber production or ranching on your property unless they pass a law that says you can't do something like this, you know, and it's, or they could, you know, seize your property by eminent domain if they wanted to as well. So I don't know what exactly this does. It seems kind of like a feel good thing, but like doesn't really accomplish much. I don't know. I guess it's better to have something like that in the Constitution than not, maybe. But who knows? It is Texas. They'll probably vote for it. I don't know. So there was it's got support from the Commissioner of Agriculture, South Texans Property Rights Association, Texans for Fiscal Responsibility, Texas Cattle Feeders, Texas Farm Bureau, Texas Forestry Association, Landowners Council, Nursery and Landscape Association, Poultry Federation, Realtors, Seed Trade Association, Sheep and Goat Raisers Association, the Wildlife Association, and Travis County Farm Bureau. Texas Farm Bureau President Russell Boning says Prop 1 isn't about protecting the past. It's about ensuring Texans' access to safe and affordable food in the future. The amendment protects all farmers and ranchers, large and small. Only responsible, normal, day-to-day agricultural practices are protected, not practices employed by bad actors. So, how does it protect, though? That's the part that I'm not quite sure on. Representatives Dwayne Burns, Dustin Burroughs, Mary Gonzalez, Trent Ashby, and Diego Bernal. So we got two Democrats and three Republicans there. Farmers and ranchers who engage in production agriculture within municipal boundaries are being subject to broad over-regulation by municipal ordinances that prohibit and greatly restrict normal practices of agricultural operations, such as the raising and keeping of livestock, blah, 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 blah. HJR 126 seeks to address this issue and empower landowners in the state by constitutionally protecting the right to engage in certain generally accepted agricultural practices on their own property. Okay, so that that explains it a little bit better. So that they can't have like an HOA or the, you know, the city say like, you can't have chickens here. If you own it, you have a right to do it. So, all right. Sounds good. Good move, Texas, I guess. Now you got to vote for it. So that's 2023 vote. Huh? Weird. Wonder why that is. What's the decision behind an off-year election like that? I don't know. I couldn't tell you. But anyways, I hope you learned something today. I did. Where was the bug story? There was. Oh yeah. Hold on. We're not done yet. We got more to talk about. So went down a rabbit hole the other day. Tyson Foods partners with insect protein startup to develop ingredient facility. So the meat giant will work with Protix to construct a plant dedicated to insect protein items in the U.S. for use in pet food, aquaculture, and livestock production. So there was an article I read that they were saying that, like, plant-based diets are not really the problem. It's the fact that they're for some reason considered feminine, and guys are not gravitating towards a vegan diet because it's considered feminine for some reason. I don't know why. They just couldn't figure it out. And so what I think is happening is while they're still trying to force this like bug deal down us, like they're still heavily invested in that, but they're meeting a lot of pushback from people actually wanting to eat bugs. So now they're like, hey, let's feed them to animals instead of plants, I guess. So Tyson Foods announced a strategic investment with insect protein startup Protix to boost the presence of insect ingredients utilized in the food system. The plant says the meat giant said it plans to construct an ingredient facility in the U.S. with Protix that will upcycle food manufacturing byproducts into high-quality insect proteins and lipids for use in pet foods, aquaculture, and livestock production. Insect protein has grown in prominence in recent years with companies debuting cricket-based snacks and powders because producing the niche protein uses less water and land than livestock. Advocates have pitched it as a sustainable alternative to traditional meat like beef and pork. Cricket ingredient brand Exo said crickets are 20 times more efficient to grow than cattle. The insect life cycle provides opportunity for full circularity within our value chain, strengthening our commitment to building a more sustainable food system for the future, John R. Tyson, the meat giant's CFO, said in a statement. Global insect protein is expected to increase by a compound annual growth of 27.4%. by 2028. So wow. Over a quarter grown by more than a quarter in 5 years. That's That's optimistic. Keys Arts, CEO of the Netherlands-based Protix, said the agreement will add the insect protein maker's supply chain by using Tyson's meat production byproducts as feed for its insects. Oh, okay. So they're going to, like, all that feed that's still in the rumen, they're going to just feed that to crickets instead. And then they're going to grind those crickets up and make a nice little goo for us all to eat. Eat your bug goo, kids. It's good for you. This one's beef flavored. Tyson's pursuit of the space is centered on ingredients for food production, aimed to feed animals in the supply chain, rather than insect-based products for human consumption. Other livestock producers have embraced the space, including Cargill, which partnered with InnovaFeed. Innova Feed, that's probably what it is, in 2022 to develop sustainable fertilizer and animal feed made from insects. All right, well, if you remember back to the mad cow scare, some of you younger folks that listen to this show may not be old enough to remember when that was a huge deal. Well, mad cow disease, or BSE, if I recall correctly, it all came about from feeding animal products back to the same animals that they came, like the same species of animal that they came from. So they took the brain and the nervous, you know, the spinal cord and everything from steers that they were butchering, and they ground that up into some sort of protein meal, which was then fed to cattle and feedlots and stuff. And that led to bovine spongiform encephalopathy. That may be 100% bullshit, but I think that's a relatively good Cliff Notes explanation of it. Feel free to fact check me on that, because I'm not married to that premise, but that if I remember right, that's kind of seems to me that's how it came about. That being said, cattle are herbivores. They eat plants. That's what they do. They're very good at converting all sorts of different plants into energy that they can use and thrive on. Incredibly efficient creatures, the cow. What's that going to do when you start feeding them bugs? Like, what problems are going to come of that? Because cattle don't just go around and eat bugs on their own. Not intentionally, anyways. Like, you'll hear people, like, they'll talk about how cattle don't eat corn in the wild, but, like, cattle breaks through. A cow's gonna break through a fence and get to that corn if she can. Like that's happened plenty of times. Like you give a cow a chance to eat some corn, she's going to. and you don't have to try real hard to make her. I mean, they like corn. They'll eat it. I've never seen a bovine in my career ever go out of its way to eat a bug of any sort. I've seen a heifer destroy a pigeon with her mouth, but they didn't eat it. Like she killed this pigeon bigger than shit. I mean, just like a dog, you know, when they just go to shake something. It's kind of what she did. Feathers everywhere. Then she spit it out and kind of bellered at it and hopped around it. And yeah, that was kind of the end of it. But I've never seen them try to eat a bug. So when you're creating this feed supplement or product from these insects and feeding it to cattle or hogs would probably be okay. They're herbivores, but let's say you're putting it in dairy feed, you're putting it in beef feed, and you're feeding it to sheep, you know, goats, all that type of shit, horses even. Like, what's that gonna do? Like, because their body's not designed to, as far as I know, to ingest that type of a protein profile. You know, they're herbivores, and they're not carnivores. They're not omnivores. They eat plants exclusively. That's what they do. So what is that gonna do to them? Like, I don't know, man. There seems like there should be a lot more research done into that before that there should be a huge push toward it. I don't know. Maybe that's just me being old fashioned, but yeah, I don't know. Don't make them eat shit that they're not supposed to eat. You know, leads to issues. Look at all the fat fucks running around here because they decided high fructose corn syrup was a great idea and 11 servings of grain was essential. You know, shit gets weird when you make something eat a bunch of shit they're not supposed to. So, and anyways, remember that for future use, and have a good day. This has been the fucking Farm Report.
Up in the morning beneath the stars so bright, pull your hat down, make sure your cinch is tight. Horse is kinda snuffy, cold chill up your spine, it'll get your ass moving, sun or burning daylight. Burning daylight in the saddle till the job's done right.